I have also, I tried to understand the psychology of people. Like I've always explained, when you keep things in your closet or when you keep things in your purse, you always segregate everything. You don't put everything together. So why is it that when it comes to waste, we are so reluctant to segregate? So the only answer that I keep getting is, I think because it's leaving their house, they don't care. It's a question of mindset. That is the problem.
On this week's podcast episode, you'll hear a story of how residents took matter into their own hands and set up Bangalore's first waste-to-energy power plant. Hello and a warm welcome to Mission Shunya podcast. Here as always, your host Girish Shivakumar. A big thanks to all the listeners who gave me a feedback, wrote a review on Apple Podcast, iTunes, and also to a lot of people who have subscribed to the podcast channel and also following the Facebook page of Mission Shunya. So if you haven't done that, you can follow Mission Shunya on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and go by the handle at Mission Shunya. You can also subscribe to the podcast, which is available on Apple Podcast, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Gaana, JioSaavn, and many more. So just as I mentioned in the podcast intro, on this week's episode, we will hear about a story of how a Bangalore Resident Welfare Association got their act together in setting up Bangalore's first waste-to-energy power plant. So my special guest for this episode is...
My name is Padmashree Balram, and I am the president of the Kurumangala Residents Welfare Association and a founder member of Bangalore Eco Team. And I think I evangelize, advocate waste management at a very grassroots level.
Kurumangala is a residential hub in the Indian city of Bengaluru. It is very diverse in terms of age, cultural and educational backgrounds. Padmashree Balram has been leading the activities at the Residential Welfare Association for quite some time. And I read a few stories about their work which caught my attention. And so I wanted to know more. So how did she get interested in something like waste management at a grassroots level, as she calls it? Was it a career choice?
It had very little to do with the career, but more to do with being a mother. I used to find that my children were wheezing and coughing without a reason. And I soon discovered that it was because of the large amounts of garbage that was collecting at every part around my house. And so that became my mission. Because being a biochemist in my education, I felt that all the smells, the insects, the general problem with the garbage is what is bothering my children. So I decided to take on the waste, not so much processing, but just getting rid of the waste as such. That's how it started, and it was very organic from there onwards.
That is really interesting. Because people generally, when they see problems happening around, not many decide to take action at the scale that you have taken. So how did you begin by doing this? You said you are a biochemist. So did you have to quit your job and start this?
I didn't have to quit a job. I was a stay-at-home mom teaching from home. I was a home tutor in chemistry. So that was that did not change. So whatever I did was during the time when my children went to school. And I wanted to know the genesis of the waste, where it is coming from, why is it coming there, and where should it be going? And it was not easy to find these answers because nobody even knew who was throwing the waste and all that thing. So we started doing actual manning of places where the garbage was being thrown, finding out who is doing it, and then getting to them. And you know, I was also learning in the process. I had no idea what is segregation. I had no idea what is composting. I learned it, but because of my biochemical background, I was able to pick it up quickly. And also, I could call a bluff very quickly if someone tried to tell me something else about garbage, which was not true. For instance, like burning is not a problem. That is what it was 10, 15 years ago. Burning leaves is not a problem. That's the only thing that you can do. So these are the things that I could call a bluff and say, this is not right, and we can find other ways of processing these things. So that's where I think my background helped me, and being working from home also helped me a lot.
That is very interesting. I mean, it gives a clear perspective of how you saw problem and how you actually quantified what is right, what is wrong, and then started to give. So how did it all begin being in a residence welfare association currently? I'm sure it was not actually the case when you started off. So how did you get people on board, and how did you go about doing this?
Fortunately, I live in a neighborhood which is very conscious, civic conscious. And so what happened was there were my neighboring resident associations which were very keen on solving this problem, which was so common to all of us, and it kind of bound us actually. Garbage in a way has a very great binding ability because it brings people together, because it's such a common problem and it gives the same bad effects to everybody. It has really bound a lot of us together, and we have tried to solve this problem together. And different welfare associations thought the only way is if we residents come together and try to stand up against this huge mountain of trash that was collecting everywhere. And we genuinely felt that the municipality, though it wanted to, was unable to handle this kind of waste. So instead of fighting the municipality, what we did was we joined hands with them and said, you know what, let's come with you. Let's see what the problem is. Let's talk to residents. Let's help them segregate. Let's educate them. And we found a lot of help and support coming our way from the municipality also. So it was like a, you know, win-win for both. And when we went door to door with these people, with our auto rickshaw tippers, they also realized the importance of, you know, getting segregated waste as against mixed waste. So we educated people about why we have to segregate and what is the need to segregate. And, you know, how the auto rickshaw drivers also sit in a tipper which stinks. So we introduced a human angle to it also, and why our paura karmikas have to be, you know, treated better. So that could happen only at a resident welfare association level and not at a municipality level, because we also know the psychology of the people who live in an area. So you have the some members of Koramangala, it's a very posh, very high-end kind of people. Only the local people living there would know how to approach these guys. So different people needed different kinds of approach. And that's where the resident welfare associations could help, because they knew who could be potential non-compliers, who could be the compliers, and how to go about and fix that problem.
At this point, it is well worth a moment to reflect on the story so far. Padmashri saw a problem which was impacting her child. She had a technical degree which helped her make sense of the problem and find solutions, and then had the will to get people along to implement the process. Well, you could rather argue that Koramangala locality, as she mentions, is an upmarket locality with highly educated people, which means they could understand the problem and act on it. But the reality, as it turns out, is a little different. Because waste management begins with waste segregation. And it turns out whether you are educated or not, you just don't bother to segregate waste before disposal. But why do people commit such mistakes?
I have also, tried to understand the psychology of people. Like I've always explained, when you keep things in your closet or when you keep things in your purse, you always segregate everything. You don't put everything together. So why is it that when it comes to waste, we are so reluctant to segregate? So the only answer that I keep getting is, I think because it's leaving their house, they don't care. They don't give a damn actually. And so there was complete lack of awareness that how does it matter? Why should I segregate? Anyway, the other thing is they used to see that if they segregate, the auto rickshaw person is mixing the waste. So there were too many things, and some people even went to the extent that we are paying taxes and the government has to take care of all this. We are not going to do all these things. So it was all about my waste is somebody else's responsibility. That was the mindset of, and that still continues actually to some extent, that my waste is your responsibility. And we are trying to shake that and say, no, your waste is your responsibility. Like we say in Kannada, nam kasa nam javabdari. So it is, we are trying to push that, but yes, segregation is a big problem because of the lack of awareness. once we tell people that if you do not segregate, 100% of your waste goes to a landfill, which is in the neighborhood of a village, and that child in that village is suffering because of your irresponsibility. And then when we connect all those dots, people seem to realize that only 5% of their waste needs to go to a landfill, if at all. And the rest of it has very wonderful destinations, and it can be very well processed and brought back into the system without going and landing up in a landfill. So once we give those proper awareness programs, and I must have done like more than 100 workshops where we actually explain to children, adults, and senior citizens also. And when once they realize, they kind of start changing. It's a question of mindset. That is the problem.
It's an interesting stat that you mentioned. Only 5% is actually going to the landfill. But what happens to the other 95%? I assume converting to energy is one key thing that happens. So how did you set up the waste to energy plan?
See, the 5% that goes, out of which some of it is dry waste, which is sent for recycling. And most of it is the pet waste from the kitchen. So when you say the rest of it is not waste to energy, rest of it is divided again into wet and recycling waste. So when we talk of the wet waste, there are many ways of processing it, the original way being composting. But now when you talk of the amount of, you in a place like Bangalore, we have a huge space crunch, and it is that NIMBY mindset, which is not in my backyard mindset, which says you cannot process anything in my backyard because it smells, there are rats and there are things like that. So the waste to energy project, which is waste to biogas project, or the thought came strictly based on no smell because it's not aerobic, and no space requirement because every day's waste gets processed every day. So we had to come up with a solution which was anaerobic. Hence, we and other members of our Resident Welfare Association in Koramangala, we put our minds together and went and did a recce of many biomethanization plants. We came across one plant which we were extremely happy with, because we were standing right next to the plant and there was no smell. And that was one of the preconditions that we wanted, because this plant would be in the center of our Koramangala. So we could not have something which was stinking or which would eventually have to be shut down by the neighbors. So we loved that solution. We spoke to the person, he's Mr. Som Narayan of Carbon Masters. So we spoke with him, and he was a bit reluctant initially to come over, speaking to a bunch of housewives. He was not sure how far this project would go. But he realized, I think, that we were very, very serious, and we had all the right backing from the municipality and from our MLA. So there was a general an ecosystem which was very conducive to bring about this change from waste to responsible energy, if I could use that word. And so it started, the process started rolling, and it was much, much, much faster than anybody could imagine, because we were all aligned. The stars were aligned, we were all aligned, all the ideas were aligned. And we set it up, and we kind of created history in Koramangala, because now we process decentralized. We completely process it decentralized, because our waste does not leave our area. Our capacity is not very high, but all the 4 tons that it needs, it gets locally within less than 2 kilometers. So it is, it's basically the most, the best and for the climatic action, for the climate action also, it is the best solution that we can find for waste management. As simple as that. Just convert it to biogas. And there are so many hotels within Koramangala, within the area of our plant, that we are supplying piped gas to the restaurants. And their entire kitchen runs on the biogas. And this particular biogas plant And this technology I liked was originally they used to say in biogas plants, you can't use lemon, you can't use musambi, and you can't use soppu and all those things. So that would have been impossible for us to sit down and ask people to segregate to the next level. As it is, segregating kitchen waste is hard. You cannot have people separating to the next level. So therefore, this technology was even more appealing to us that Carbon Masters was putting forward. So that's how, you know, it kind of, we were able to tick all the boxes with this solution. And so we went forward. So now we have people putting all their nimbus and soppus and everything in their waste, which just comes here and gets processed daily. And daily, the restaurant is getting its full quota of gas. So that is something phenomenal and not done anywhere else.
It is important to notice that Padmashree mentions about the aligning of multiple factors, including the stars, municipalities, etc., in order to set up an end-to-end initiative like this. In spite of their best efforts, the project took about a year to be built and start operating. But with the support of local government leaders, the project was always on. But as I mentioned earlier, it is also crucial for the residents to align with the idea and do their bit by responsibly segregating the waste at the source. Another crucial element is that the local municipality should also have the wherewithal to ensure that the waste is not mixed up right after collection, but rather reach the waste-to-energy plant as desired. So how challenging is that part?
Actually, right now I don't think they feel it's a challenge. In fact, they're liking it because they don't have to travel 30-odd kilometers to, you know, for a waste. There is not even a transfer happening. That is, from the auto tipper, it gets transported to a compactor. That is not happening now. The auto tipper directly puts it into the plant. So in that sense, there is no, they're quite happy with it. But yes, if they bring waste, for instance, some of the people have a festival and they put a whole lot of coconut leaves and 90% of the waste becomes coconut, then we call them up and, you know, kind of tell them, this is not the way you bring your waste. You need to have some proportion and other things. So that is the challenge that they're facing in terms of large commercial waste that they bring in. The residences are doing a good job, and the auto rickshaw drivers are not mixing waste now, because we have developed a very simple system of picking waste on different days. That is, we pick up wet waste on 5 days of the week and we pick up dry waste on the other 2 days of the week. So the auto rickshaw people are also very happy that they get their dry waste completely on one day, which they're able to sell and get some money. And the wet waste comes entirely on 5 days of the week, which is just processed very well, very easily. So it is not that much of a challenge, I feel, now. All the hard work has been done. But for it to be repeated in another place, this whole process will have to be done on a very big scale again.
That's a novel way to do it. Just tell them that you get the wet waste 5 days, as you rightly said, and get the other waste on the other 2 days. In terms of the impact that you feel that you have had so far in this space, how would you quantify it? You did mention that the gas that is being generated is sold to restaurants in the nearby locality. But are there any other impacts that you are having in the space?
Impacts as in, we have managed to get a lot of people aware of this in the first place. And in our waste processing unit, we don't have just the biogas plant. We have other processes too. So, if you ask me in terms of, I cannot quantify, because I have no idea how much of impact we have actually done physically. But I can say that we have reduced transportation. You know, 80% of the greenhouse gases are due to transportation. And because of our decentralized way of processing, I don't know how much, but we have definitely added our little bit to reducing this carbon emissions. Because the truck doesn't have to go all the way. We are just transferring it right there. And just imagine if we could do all the ward's waste, if we process it completely within the ward, how much we would have contributed towards reducing carbon emissions and greenhouse gas emissions. So I don't think I could quantify that, but I can tell you we are definitely, you know, doing well in terms of carbon emissions.
That's perfectly acceptable, because every action counts and every small act like this definitely makes a big impact. Although you're not able to quantify now, but I'm sure like, you know, over a period of time, when you go back to the restaurants, they'll probably be able to say what is the difference that they are having.
Oh, they are having a big difference because their cost is 20% less.
That is still significant.
They pay 20% less for biogas than they pay for, for regular butane. And the other thing is, what the restaurant owners told me was very heartening the other day, that he says, because of the wide information that has gone around that this restaurant runs on biogas produced in Koramangala itself, more patronage has been happening. More people want to come just because they feel they're doing the right thing in eating at a restaurant which has gone green completely. So in that sense, the restaurant is very happy. A very young and happening crowd is coming there and giving huge patronage to these places. And he's, of course, very low profile person, but he's enjoying the fact that he's going all green. The other thing I might like to add is, because of segregation levels being so high, we're able to retrieve a large amount of dry waste because of segregation. So our auto rickshaw drivers and our dry waste collection center is also doing extremely well. 40 tons a week we are getting of dry waste. So when you segregate, everybody wins. That's what, you know, not just our biogas plant, our dry waste collection center is also doing amazingly well. And in the bargain, our auto rickshaw drivers are making good money because they are getting not just low value plastic, but good high value plastics also.
That's a phenomenal example. I mean, everyone in the ecosystem tends to benefit, and you clearly demonstrate that everyone is benefiting. I have one quick question on the dry waste collection part, because earlier in the podcast, I also covered topics like upcycling. People take out waste and then make better products out of it. Is there any angle that you have thought about upcycling in the entire value chain so far?
So we have a thermocol plant here within a thermocol collection center, which is only for thermocol. We have it in our solid waste center. And that thermocol now is being processed and it is upcycled to a very high level of plastic. I don't know how he has done that. There's a machine which he puts it through and it gets upcycled, and that is being sent to make plastic pens and paper hold, those pen holders and clips and earrings and other things. So instead of the stinky thermocol that comes in, which normally is a crate to carry fish, so he just converts it into volume has also reduced. You know, thermocol is very voluminous. Although it's very light, it's extremely voluminous. So the size has been reduced. It has been shrunk to a small quantity and it is upcycled to various forms of, you know, other things that they can do from it.
That's a great example, because like for people, when you talk to people who are actually upcycle, they say the biggest challenge for them is to get good quality waste. And if you're providing good quality waste to people who are setting up that business, I'm sure it will definitely flourish. So that's a good start, I would say.
He is doing very well, actually. And he even picks up for free. So he is just too happy to pick up because obviously his market is good. So he's ready to come for free and pick up waste from any market. Madiwala market, he goes, he just picks up and comes. So BBMP has given him a waste picker, card. So he picks up waste and he picks up mattresses also, which he again opens up a coir mattress and cotton mattress. He opens up the cotton, sends it for further upcycling, and he uses the coir and sends it back to the mattress manufacturers to process and reuse it to make mattresses. So it's phenomenal what's happening in our waste center in Koramangala. All the upcycling and conversion to responsible energy is happening. Yes.
Did you notice something in the last two stories? A flourishing restaurant whose operation costs have gone down by over 20% and a plastic waste handler who has gone on to scale up operations are the spillover effects of the solid waste management center. In fact, at this point, there is no definite numbers to quantify, and the residential welfare group is not very keen to quantify these numbers at this point in time. But I'm sure they will take note as time progresses. Upcycling, as I've mentioned a few times earlier in different podcast episodes, can be a success story in itself. So how does this residential welfare group go about spreading the message? The problem is not a unique one confined to their locality, I'm sure a lot of urban centers are facing similar problems and definitely want to solve it the novel way. So how do they go about doing it?
So the first thing we do is an experiential learning. So after I finish all my workshops, I say, and workshops are after all just me talking and you hearing. I make it absolutely a point that they should come and visit our center. So they all come and take an experiential learning there. There are batches and batches of students. There are municipal workers. They are from all wards across Bangalore. They come. Resident welfare associations have come. And various social organizations like Rotary, Inner Wheel, and, so many organizations come and they learn. And then sometimes they even call me over to kind of help them understand how to manage their waste, how to process it, and other things. And for that, what I've done is I've started a company called Waste Maya, which helps big campuses and places of worship to process their waste in situ with various options that are available.
That's a great example. I'm sure, like, as you mentioned about starting a new company called Waste Maya that provides solutions to other people who want to do this, I would like to ask you, like, looking back at when you started, when you wanted to do it for your kids, do you think you've come a full circle where do you feel very happy that you've managed to contribute in a bigger way, in a bigger scale now?
I sometimes have to pinch myself to even believe where I have come and what a responsible citizen can do. There's nothing exceptional about any of us if we are ready to focus on the problem and not wait for someone else to, take the lead. It's you, and you have to empower yourself and then just move. And I'm extremely proud of the way we have handled the waste today, and we have become, our credibility is so high that when the budgeting happens, I'm invited to sit there in the budgeting round for the municipality to find out what are the things that the ward needs, what are the things that we need to do a better job. So as a citizen, if I could do it, I'm sure many of us could do it. But yeah, I think I'm truly satisfied with what I have done so far, but there's lots to do.
Perfectly said. I couldn't say more, because like everyone needs to believe that they can have a positive impact.
Yeah.
That is what even I tend to encourage people who listen to this podcast or follow Mission Chunia on social media.
Right.
Just do one bit, and I'm sure if you do that bit consistently, you will have a bigger impact. And when you look back, you'll feel really happy. Padmashree, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the podcast. And this is the kind of story that I want to capture and tell people, like, when someone can do it at this scale, everyone can do it. So thanks for taking time and sharing your views, your journey. I'm sure a lot of people will definitely feel inspired and take action in this space.
Thank you so much, Girish, for giving me this opportunity to talk about my passion and about what every one of us can do. And you know well that all your listeners could reach out to me for anything that they need within their areas or wherever. More than happy to help.
So yes, that brings to end one more inspiring story of someone who has changed the way things are done around them for good. Padmashree has been kind enough to extend an open invitation to all Mission Chunia followers to visit the facility. So if you are in Bangalore in India, or if you are in any remote corner of the world, feel free to write to her at wastemaya@gmail.com. That is wastemaya@gmail.com to get more details of the project or anything that you want to know on this topic. I'm sure you'll definitely hear back. Or if you are a top Mission Chunia fan, write to me at missionchunia@gmail.com and I will make the personal introduction. And finally, regular listeners of the Mission Chunia podcast have reminded me that I have missed something in the last few episodes. That is to give the weekly action item after every episode. So on this week's action item towards Mission Chunia, sticking to the theme and the subject, just take a moment to see how your waste is handled at home. Do you segregate it as wet waste and dry waste? If you are in a residential locality, make sure the collection centers in your neighborhood also have the separate bins. If it's all fine, kudos to you. And if in your part of the world waste segregation is not practiced, well, then there is a big opportunity for you to be the change. See what you can do about it. You have heard about the pros and cons of waste segregation, so you can make better decisions now. But if you need help, Mission Chunia is here. Drop me a line and we can get started with it. And finally, if you like the episode, if you like the Mission Shunya theme and what we do at Mission Shunya, help spread the word. Let your friends and colleagues know about it. You can share the episode to a friend or colleague, or make sure you spread the message to at least 3 people every week. By doing that, we'll have a lot of people following Mission Shunya as we go along. So with that, signing off, this is Mission Shunya, towards a zero carbon economy.